This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swing, high fly ball! Belt to right center! And the Braves have won it!
There's a new home run champion of all time! And it's Henry Aaron!
A walk-off homer from Freeman and the Braves win it!
Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of Behind the Braves, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves digital media content manager, virtually via Zoom alongside Braves director of alumni relations, Greg McMichael. Greg, we've got some whole lot of excitement happening with our 2021 Braves. As you and I are sitting here recording this, we're currently in a first place tie in the NL East with the Phillies, and the Phillies and Dodgers are playing right now, and then we play last game of the homestand against the Reds here in just a couple hours. So we'll, by the time this comes out, hopefully we'll be in sole possession at first, but either way, we're in a good spot. So want to get into that, but the reason we're recording via Zoom today, you're on assignment today. You went and visited one of our very first guests, actually, that we had on Behind the Braves, a Braves legend, easily the best voice that we've ever had on the show, hosts included, hosts, guests, everybody included. You went to visit our pal Rico Cardi. How's he doing?
Big boy. Big boy's doing big boy. Well. Big boy. Yeah, Rico's doing great. Rico had he had knee surgery back in the Dominican, and that was kind of tough on him. But then right after that, He got a little sick, had something that he couldn't kick, and like a some sort of infection. And so his daughter brought him over to the States, and he's been getting some great care, and man, he's doing well. He looks great. I spent about an hour with him today and talking, meeting his grandkids and his great grandkids and talking with them at their house, and just had a great time visiting with him and just checking on him. I love hearing his stories and talking about baseball. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see him play, but he's kind of one of those guys like Hank, you know, that I heard stories about, but I really didn't get the chance to watch. So it's always fun visiting with Rico. Like you said, he's got a great voice and just got a lot of fun time, some great time hanging out with him.
Yeah, well, you know, if you're a newer listener to Behind the Braves, or you weren't with us from the very beginning of the show, definitely go back. Again, it was fall or maybe even winter of 2018. It was among the first 10 episodes we put out of Behind the Braves, and we had Rico on, and it really stood out. It was a great interview, kind of like you. Obviously, I wasn't around to see him play either, and he was just a name. I was familiar with the name, seen the baseball card, but as I probably said on the show 3 years ago, beyond that, I didn't really know much about the man. And that was one of those things I was thankful for, just from a personal standpoint of getting to do this show, is learning a little bit about players who I just previously didn't know anything about. And not only that, then getting to meet them and talk to them in person. Rico is one that always comes to mind. Bruce Benedict, we had him on a couple years ago, another guy before my time, but boy, it was just great to learn about him. So again, if you're a newer listener to Behind the Braves, go back and check out some of those old shows, even the ones from 3 years ago. We of course will talk a little current Braves on our shows, but most of the time it's all about the guest and those what do we say in the biz? That's evergreen content. Those interviews.
That's right. Well, let me tell you what, Rico loves the game of baseball. So he'll be watching the Braves on his laptop. He's watching another game on this big screen there. he always asked me about, well, tell me about Acuna. Tell me about, you know, Adam Duvall. What's new with the team? Because he loves to talk hitting. He was one of those guys that we call a professional hitter. Mm-hmm. So he could hit in his sleep. He was just, unfortunately for Rico, he had some knee problems. He had tuberculosis 1 year that kept him out. He had some different health problems that kind of side-railed his career, or, you know, he probably would have played five, you know, more years and would have been a lot. But I mean, he's got just unbelievable batting average. He hit for power and he hit the ball in the gaps and he hit for average. Go back and look at his numbers. It's just pretty amazing. But yeah, he still loves it. And he's sharp as a tack. I mean, he's in his 80s, but he is watching the Braves every night. He's a Braves fan and just loves the game of baseball. So it's fun talking with him on that front, as well as just meeting his family and talking about life experiences.
Oh, that's cool. That's great. Well, I hope to see him out here again at Truist Park sooner rather than later, and love to get to sit down and chat with him again, because I felt like we just scratched the surface with him.
We may see him at Los Bravos in September. Oh,
that would be awesome.
We may see him. So I'm working on it. We'll see. But he is anxious to get back out to the ballpark. We just want to make sure that he has a good experience and he's ready for it. So, but I have thrown it out there to him.
Cool. Okay. Well, hopefully we'll get to see him out here. Los Bravos Day. I was just talking to our counterpart, Fernando, who hosts Los Bravos podcast along with your old teammate, Eddie Perez. And we're hoping to finally do our crossover episode where nice. All of us sit down in a room around Los Bravos Day. So you got that to look forward to. So, yeah, hopefully we can have Rico out there for that as well. Well, look, as I mentioned, you know, you can always go back and listen to some of our older shows with some of our guests. And we've been very fortunate to have you name a big name from Braves country. We've probably had them on the show at one point or another. Other longtime listeners of this show know we also occasionally do a little thing called the Bubba and Harry show, where it's just us and there's no guests. So if everybody just decides they just can't stand us anymore and don't want to talk to us, then, well, it's like, all right, we'll just do our show. No, just kidding. We like to just change it up a little bit every now and then. Just the two of us sit down and talk. I think we last did a Bubba and Harry show, I think it was when I was at the beach, so about 2 months ago now. So it's about time. The team is rolling now. Things are going well. We got new guys. Figured this would be a good time for us to chat. If you are a new listener, I'm Bubba. Greg's Harry. If you want to find out why he's named Harry, well, then you would need to go back and listen to the Greg Maddox episode from 2018. And I couldn't tell you when the Bubba thing started, but it definitely started from a comment in the reviews of this show. Somebody just called me Bubba. So Bubba and Harry thing is taking on a life of its own, and that is our alter egos now.
And now it's on your nameplate at the office. So yeah. It's official. It's official on work day.
It is literally, I'll have to tweet out a picture of that or something, because that is the my custom design plate at my desk that you made for me. And I just assumed it would be up for a day and then somebody would like take it down or put. No, it's been up there for like a week and a half and no sign of it going away. So there it is. Okay, well, let's get into this. We're talking about the 21 Braves a little bit. Man, this is, as we're recording this, we're coming off the heels of that big walk-off win from Ozzie Albies in extra innings last night. This team, the first thing that comes to mind, I was just talking to Brad Merriweather here in the office, who's senior director of marketing for the Braves, and we were just talking about how the moves made at the trade deadline, the team as it's currently constructed, it's not an entirely brand new team, but it kind of feels like a new team. It's a different team than we had on, say, July 29th. That's for sure. And what Brad and I were talking about was that win last night, that comeback win, felt like 2019 again to me. It felt like a 2019 win. Don't get me wrong, the 2020 team was obviously great. I mean, within just a few outs of the World Series, but 2020, 60-game season, that was just a whole thing. So I don't even know how to describe that. It was just a completely different kind of experience. This felt a lot more like that 2019 team that was confident. And, hey, somebody stumbles, the rest of the teammates pick them up. And that's what that felt like last night. Will Smith's going through a bit of a rough patch. his guys fought back, won the game anyways. And that's what you'd love to see. That's what I love to see. I guess I was thinking what that was like for you as a player when the team would go out and make additions at the trade deadline. And of course, the first thing that came to my mind was your rookie year, 93. That's maybe still to this day, probably the most famous trade deadline acquisition ever made by the Braves in getting Fred McGriff. And I don't think it was right at the deadline, but it was around that time. What is that like in the clubhouse when the front office goes out and adds pieces? And I mean, to me as a fan, it makes me feel good as a fan, because I'm like, okay, the front office is, they see that the opportunity is there and they're trying to help. So what is that like in the clubhouse from a player's perspective?
Well, it's kind of a double-edged sword. So one of my best friends was Sid Bream. So in 1993, we go out and get Fred McGriff. And as exciting as that was, I'm thinking, oh, I guess he's taking Sid's spot. And, you know, so you have people that you've been in battle with, and you know you're already a good team. And you've been in the World Series in 91. You've been in the World Series in 92. Now 93, you know, you're struggling. I mean, you're still a good team, but you're facing a crazy challenge. The Giants are 10 games ahead of you. And then you go out and you're able to secure one of the best hitters in the league with Fred McGriff. And so you're like, oh, wow, how in the world did we do that? And then you're like, well, and, you know, then everybody is kind of like, man, okay, well, we're getting ready to step it up a notch. So there's an excitement there. And especially when you know your team needs an injection of energy. They need an injection of, you know, a couple spots. And you feel bad for the guys who maybe aren't performing as well, or they're in a position that they shouldn't be. I mean, maybe they're closing because, and I'm not saying this about Will Smith, but just for instance, you've got a guy closing because there's a guy hurt. You know, Wohlers goes down, and you know, you've got a guy like Kerry Leitenberg, he's having to close because Wohlers is hurt, you know, or something like that. That's different. But when guys aren't performing, and then all of a sudden the front office goes and says, okay, we're going to add these pieces, it gets everybody super excited. But then you're also kind of cognizant of that, okay, some people are getting ready to lose their job. So you kind of mixed emotions a little bit, but I think once you get past that part of it and you realize, okay, this is a team game. I just made a mistake on the field. Like, you know, the two games you pointed out about Will didn't have his best. He walks a guy, he hits a guy, he gives up a two-run homer. And then all of a sudden your team goes out there and they pick you up and you win the game in the 12th with a three-run bomb. That's when you know things are going well. But it's also a reminder that this is a team game, that you can't be so focused on your own individual performance that you forget about that you've got, you know, 20 other guys on the team that are there to pick you up for some. So then it kind of encourages you to put that behind you and go back out and give it your best. And so it really allows you to be a little bit short-sighted or not as short-sighted. So you're thinking about, oh, okay, this is a team game. Okay, I did poorly, but man, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to tear it up next time. So that allows you to do that. And that's when you know that you're rocking and rolling as a team, when those things start to happen. Like, you know, I was ticked last night like everybody else. There were multiple times in the game where we didn't bunt a guy over, right? Not that we don't do that very much, but, you know, then one game we ran through a stop sign. You know, Solaire ran through the stop sign that Wash had up. And then, I'm trying to think, our center fielder didn't bunt the guy over, you know. So I'm just thinking.
On Heredia.
Yeah, Heredia. So he didn't bunt him over. And then we walked a couple guys. And there were multiple things that I was upset about throughout that game, because we were shooting ourselves in the foot. And you can't do that when you're chasing people. You have to play clean ball. But it just is a reminder that when you make those mistakes, there's guys there to pick you up. And we've got a big enough and deep enough lineup where we're going to be able to pick up some guys. Freddie wasn't on his game. You can tell he's still not feeling that great. So guess what? You know, Solaire's there to pick him up. Duvall's there to pick him up. And now we got Darno back, got a big hit. swinging the bat good, had a walk. So, man, I expect more about not shooting ourselves in the foot, but more about picking guys up when they don't perform as well as they can.
Yeah. I was curious, as a former closer, and you went into it a little bit there, and that's really interesting to hear about when the guys pick you up, it kind of helps ease your mind a little bit. And as you said, it helps you be a little bit more short-sighted about it and just turn the page, I guess, move on. I was wondering what that was like for you as a former closer when, because I assume even the greatest closers I've ever lived go through stretches where things just think something's not working right. Maybe you're not completely healthy, or I know there were rumors but people were speculating on Twitter last night. Well, maybe Will's doing something, maybe he's tipping his pitches somehow. I mean, who knows? I mean, I'm not even trying to get into that. I'm just saying, like, whatever it is, it could be something, whatever's going on. You're going through a rough stretch. I was kind of wondering, what is that like for, if you just blew a save and you go in the dugout, I mean, what is your mindset then? You're still trying to, I'm sure you're just ticked off as you can be or upset, but at the same time, still trying to be there and just not even necessarily say anything, but supportive, standing on the top step if you can. As Will did, you know, last night. So honestly, I was just kind of wondering, what is that like for his closer? That's got to be tough.
Well, being a closer is a tough position because even though when you're pitching last, that's the last thing people remember. So you may blow the save, but you didn't necessarily lose the game. Like I said, there was a bunt that didn't happen. There was a run in the first inning that should have been two runs because we had a sack. We had what could have been a sack fly after that. So there are points in the game that you can always point to that we should have, Riley boots that ball in right field when he's on the shift. So there's things that if that would have happened in the ninth, they would have said that lost the game, but it didn't. It's a combination of all those things. So the closer, there's a magnifying glass on you, or whatever happens in the bottom of that ninth or the top of that ninth, you're going to get the blame for. So it is a tough position for that. But look, there's no closer in the big leagues right now that is, 100% in saves. Even Melanson, who's leading the league in saves, I think he's blown at least three or four saves too.
I think he's got more than Will does at this point. Don't work on that, but I'm pretty sure
he does. Yeah. I agree. He's got 37 saves. And so I don't ever remember there being a record where everybody did 100% in saves. It's just impossible.
I can think one. Literally just one.
Yeah.
And that would be Brad Lidge the year that the Phillies won the World Series. And like,
there you go.
That's literally the only one I'm aware of off the top of my
head. In the last 40 years.
Yeah. And that was like, put him in like, yeah, exactly. That put him in Cy Young conversation because that just doesn't happen.
Sure. Right. Even Mario Rivera, Mariano would blow saves because that's just the nature of the game. So it's not that you're not going to blow them. The question is, where do you get to the point where you become not as consistent? You know, you'd like to spread them out where you do one in 1 month, one another month, one another. It just doesn't always happen that way. Just like you'd like to just get one hit a game instead of going 4-for-4 and then 0-for-8 and, 3-for-4. But that is the game of baseball. I think that the key for Will is that he continues to do the things that makes him successful. I will say this. He likes to throw that curveball down and in, and I'm not a big proponent of his curveball. I think he does better with fastballs and sliders. But there again, you've got to know on that day which pitch is better for you, because sometimes you go out there, plan A is to throw a curveball and a fastball, and your curveball just doesn't have it. So you got to go to plan B, which may be sliders and changeups. Plan C may be all fastballs. Plan D may be all cutters. So you have to know and be able to recognize before it's too late. And I think the one thing that's frustrating is that it's different giving up a hit in a situation as opposed to a two-run homer. So it would have been totally acceptable if he hadn't walked the guy before him or if he hadn't hit the guy before that, on these other ones, to where it became a two-run homer as opposed to a solo homer. We always have been taught as pitchers, just don't make it more than a solo home run. You're going to give up home runs, but don't complicate it or compound the issue by giving up a walk or hitting a guy. And I think that's what's happened with Will a couple of times, is that he's been picking and not confident in getting hit. I think that's what we love about Rodriguez, is that he comes in and he fills up the zone. And I can say this, that's the one thing I've seen different about Luke this year. Why he's been so successful is he has challenged the hitter and not gone 3-2. It just seems like Will, he's in that stretch where everything is 3-2. And then that just gives the hitter such advantage. It makes a 230 hitter a 250, a 250, a 270, anytime you get behind in the count. And that's the one thing that frustrates me, that I always was trying to battle. I know that that's what Leo preached to us, is you got to go strike one and you got to stay in the head and the count and get them out before 2-2. If you get beyond 2-2, then the momentum shifts to the hitter. And especially in that ninth inning, it's just really a challenge. So I hope Will gets back to being staying aggressive. We picked him up, and I think this lineup is going to continue to pick up guys, but these pitchers need to continue to be aggressive and don't give free walks. Don't give cheap hits to these guys. Make them earn every bit and we're going to be fine.
Yep, absolutely. And I think with our theme here of we've kind of been on here talking about, you know, picking up your teammates and that sort of thing. Like even the game last night, Brady wasn't able to get the bunt down, but you have to remember he had a two-run blast earlier in the game to help get us to that point. I was thinking about, there's probably been a time earlier in the season where Will was on for the save. Somebody in the infield booted a ball, had an error, and he picked him up by getting a double play the next time around. And then, so all those things just, yeah. You know, wouldn't it almost be poetic? Because it's one of those things I love about baseball. What if you went back and Ozzie had an error earlier this year that cost Will an extra out, or Will picked him up, and then last night Ozzie picks him up? And that's just one of the things about the game, is the guys are there to pick each other up. And it's
we got to point out that this infield has been flat out unbelievable.
Yep.
If you look at their errorless streaks that these guys on the right side and the left side of the infield, I know Austin had a couple throwing errors every now and then, but I'm telling you what, that play Dansby made last night when Rodriguez was in there, that pick he made to end that inning,
fantastic.
Holy cow, he has done that time and time again. So that infield, if you want to talk about picking people up, those guys have picked a ton of the pitchers up.
Yeah. Somebody asked me in the press box the other night, they said, long term, they said, where would you put Riley defensively? I'm like, I'd leave him at third. I haven't seen anything make me want to move him from there. You know, I love him there. So
I tell you what, that is a tough position.
Yeah.
And I think I've said this before, Chipper was highly underrated as a third baseman. That we know that it's such a tough spot, but look how many third basemen have been in or gone into the Hall of Fame. Not many, because it is a challenging, and they don't get the due that they deserve, because it's just a tough spot. And Riley, I think, is for his age and what he's doing, he's been phenomenal. I wouldn't change a bit.
Riley is, it's funny. We were talking with Gabe Burns, I guess last week it was now, about Freddie Freeman possibly putting himself in the MVP conversation. It's funny how much things can evolve just in a week's time. Cause I think Bryce Harper, I'm not even sure we mentioned him last week. And now you look at him over the last week and think, well, he might be the front runner. Now I tell you, a sleeper candidate in this whole thing very well may be Austin Riley.
If Freddie's in it, then Austin should be. The reason why they talk about Freddie is because he's already won it. But I think Austin, he's the one that's carried this team. You know, it was Acuna the first 2 months, and then the last 2 months it was Austin and then Freddie. Mm-hmm. You know, but Austin's kind of been there behind Acuna and Freddie the whole time, just being as consistent as anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. So I hopefully he continues doing what he's doing and maybe get some of the national recognition that should come along with that. Cause I don't
agree.
He hasn't been getting it yet, but if he keeps doing what he's been doing, it will come. It's like Freddie. Mm-hmm. It took a lot longer than it probably should have for Freddie Freeman to get his due. We've always known here in Atlanta and out throughout Braves country what kind of ball player Freddie Freeman is. And I think maybe we're seeing a little bit of that with Austin Riley now as he kind of comes into his own. So one other thing I wanted to, I actually wrote down some notes for this show. It took almost 100 episodes for me to actually make notes and prep for an episode of Behind the Braves, Greg. One thing, I wanted to ask you about, scoreboard watching. We do it as fans. I do it as a fan. I'm curious from a player's perspective and what that, like when you would actually allow yourself to actually kind of, when if you're competing for a division title, when you would actually start to allow yourself, if you would at all. I don't know. I assume maybe guys are different in how they do, go about their business. No right way or wrong way. I'm just curious. How often would you allow yourself to kind of look at that out of town scoreboard? How often did it get talked about in the clubhouse or did it not get talked about? I'm just curious because I know as a fan, I regardless of how things are going, maybe if you're leading pretty early on, maybe I'll check in on it a little bit more often. But otherwise, if it's close or anything, I really don't let myself start looking at it until probably mid-July. And that's only because trade deadline, just seeing like this year would be a great, perfect case in point for that. Because of our division, it allowed us to be buyers at the deadline. If had we had that same record in a different division, you know, there probably wouldn't have even been much point in trying to buy because we'd just too far behind. So I started looking at it a little bit earlier this year because of that, because we were still in it and I was hoping that we would be buyers at the deadline, which we obviously were. But as a player, but usually I wait till at least August before I'm really looking at it. But as a player, how much does that actually happen? How much are you guys looking at that and keeping up with that?
I think it just depends if you have something to look at. So if there's something that, you know, I think back to 93 where we were chasing somebody and we were so far down. Actually, 94, we were chasing the Expos. Mm-hmm. We were 10 games down. 93, we were chasing the Giants were 10 games down. Everybody's watching the scoreboard because, you know, you can't get too far behind. Now, when you're up by 20 games or you're up by 10 games, which we have been, you know, through that run, you're really not paying much attention to it. I will say this. All of us have friends on other teams. And it was when I came into the league, it was pretty prevalent of people moving from team to team. Now it's probably even more, but I would say it hasn't been exponentially more, but it seemed like there were maybe some more long-term contracts back then as opposed to now. So everybody has friends on other teams. So you're looking to see how they're doing and you're paying attention. But as far as the meaningfulness of what does it mean for me to win, the Phillies to lose, we know that over the past probably 3 weeks, that's become heightened for the fans, because we talk about it from a business perspective, and you know that the players are talking about it because they want to know, gosh, we can only win one game in a row, win one, lose one, win one, lose one. And so we've got to pay close attention because we don't want to get 10 games down. So everybody's, you know, whether they're sitting there watching it during the game, but you know, the scores are everywhere, right? They're on the field, they're out of town scoreboard, they're in the clubhouse on the games, the ticker tape. So everybody's aware of it. I very rarely met a player who says, I never look at any scores. I think back about some of the golfers that would say that they don't look and see what the other scores, but then some guys, they want to know exactly where they are. And then some guys would not, because they're just playing against the golf course. They're not worried about what the other player, they're just shooting their best. Well, that doesn't happen in baseball. I mean, it's hard not to. And I was a guy that, like you, I would always look and see what the other teams are doing. It wouldn't make me play harder, but I just kind of like to know where I stand, you know, what might need to be done, just from a standpoint of not wondering.
Right. Well, I say this, whether you're a game or two out or a game or two up, or as we're recording right now, you're tied, it certainly becomes fun watching that scoreboard. And even as you and I are sitting here taping this right now, I've literally picked up my phone probably 5 times to keep checking the Dodgers-Phillies score right now. And this is what, look, now would I rather us be up by 15 games right now? Sure.
Yeah.
But this is still the fun part when you're in it. It's August. Sure. We're mid-August now, and we're in it. And I'm sitting here looking, checking that, which Dodgers are down 2-1 in the top of the eighth, by the way. So we need the Dodgers to score a couple more runs here. but that's what makes it fun.
Well, hey, think about this. Do you think the Dodgers back in 1982 were paying attention the first 2 weeks of the season to the Braves when they went 9-0, 10-0, 11-0, 12? You think they were looking at the scoreboard each night? Heck yeah, they were, because they could be 10 games back after in the first month of the season.
Isn't that wild?
So that would be a reason to watch the scoreboard, right? Normally, you wouldn't be paying attention that much at the beginning of the year, but in 1982 – everybody was watching the Braves. And I think about Huddy, one of our alumni, when he was playing for the Oakland A's and they won, 18 games in a row. You know, everybody was watching the scoreboard then to see if they could do it. So a lot of it just has to do with what interest is going on. And here we are with 2 months left in the season and we're playing, you know, paying close attention to what the scoreboard says for the Mets, because everybody's like, can the Mets really go from first to fourth? You know, they get first to third. And then are the Phillies going to do it or the Braves? So I think we got a lot of people watching this because it's a great race, and I think it's going to continue to be one.
I do, too. I mean, listen, I hope we get to about the second week of September and we've got this thing put away. But the realist in me also says this is going to be a dogfight the rest of the way. And I'll say this now, that very last week of the regular season, the homestand that happens right here at Truist Park, with the Phillies for 3 games and the Mets for 3 games. Boy, that could be one heck of a week here in Atlanta. So it's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, you think about how this season has gone and everything that this team has endured this year to be where we're sitting at right now. We couldn't ask for any more than that, I don't think, given everything that's gone on. So I'm excited. I'm in that mode now where I wake up every day and the first thing on my mind is baseball, and I can't wait to get to the park today. And that's
agreed.
Why we work in this business is for to have that feeling where you're waking up and you just can't wait to get to the ballpark. So it's going to be fun. Going to be a fun 50 days or so. Looking forward to it. So. All right. Well, I think this has been another solid edition of Bubba and Harry take over the official team podcast. So hopefully you'll join us next week when we'll have a guest back with us. So we mentioned Los Bravos night up in September and some things we're planning there. And we've got some other, we got HBCU night coming up towards the end of this month. That's going to be, if you remember last year for HBCU night, we had Coach Hollins, from Tuskegee, and then we had Braves Hall of Famer Ralph Garr on both of that episode.
He'll be back. Ralph will be back. Marquise and Marvin. And then I think we're trying to get – I think Marvin just agreed to be on our HBC Unite podcast. So awesome. I think we'll have Marvin Freeman this time.
Sweet. Well, that's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going back and forth with some other potential guests coming up here in the next couple months that we're really excited about. So we appreciate y'all, as always, for joining us. For Greg McMichael, I'm Ricky Mast. We'll see you next week on Behind the Braves.
Hey, Braves Country. We just wanted to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe Behind the Braves on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or at braves.com/behindthebraves, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you, and we'll see you next time on Behind the Braves.